This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests today are Ray Bjorklund, the president of
Birch Grove Consulting.
Birch Grove Consulting. What a wonderful... Do you have a birch grove in your yard?
No, but that's what my last name means.
Oh, okay.
In Swedish, English.
Okay, birch cool. Grove. I had no clue.
Yeah.
Our other guest is Robert Lofeld. Bob Lofeld is the president and CEO of Lofeld Consulting. And gentlemen, welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, great to be here.
Thank you.
A lot of things going on right now, but let's start with our perpetual CR. According to my calculations, we are celebrating the 20th anniversary of not passing a budget on time. any overall comments here?
Yeah, it's kind of a travesty the way the government doesn't work. It's really unfortunate, but. You know, for all the hype that you hear in the media about CR and shutdown, you know, year after year or maybe even month after month, all that hype, you know, it's like, where have we heard this song before? And don't we already know the words? And don't we know the rhythm? And I think that's really important for contractors to not get sucked up into all the hype and to recognize that things will get sorted out. It always is disruptive. To have a CR or even a pending shutdown, it's very disruptive and it does hurt some contracting activity. But generally speaking, it's the way we do business now. So get used to it.
20 years, Bob.
Yeah, there's certainly another agenda out there. As the government budget comes with great predictability when events have to occur and when budgets have to be approved, and yet for the past 20 years. The Congress has found it to be to their advantage to forestall that event and to use it, I think, as a platform for personal gain with their own constituents. So they seem to lose sight of the real criticality of getting a budget in place.
Okay. So with yet another CR in place here. Are we going to have new programs go on another hiatus? I mean, we're taping this the Friday before our due date, if you will. So we don't know if we're going to have a CR, if we're going to have a shutdown. But you know, regardless of either way, what's the deal with the new programs? Where do they go?
There's always the general guidance that there's no new starts under a CR. But there are many, many rules, and people who have sat down and studied the actual current OMB guidance on this, or even read the several thousand pages of GAO's appropriations textbook, you know, will know that there are many ways to circumvent the issues, many ways to... get programs to continue on in some form or fashion. But yes, it will be disruptive to what might have been a new start.
Okay.
And at the moment, the proposed CR is only a six-week exercise. So we all want to believe with some optimism that the Congress, if the CR passes, will have six more weeks to settle in on a budget.
Well, yeah, but 6 weeks brings us up to yet another precipitous drop the budget.
The debt ceiling limit is coming up, and we'll go through the same riders to amendments and riders to the bill, and the same arguments will resurface again.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. So this past week, Market Connections and Bosco Bell came out with a study on the cutbacks in event participation and event production by government agencies. And we're looking at some pretty significant numbers here. 57% of agencies hosting fewer events, 31% not really knowing if they're going to be producing more or less or what. But how does this impact how we do business? Take it away, Ray.
Events have always been very important to industry for networking purposes. Now, whether it's the opportunity to make connection with some key government people, but probably more importantly, even the networking among companies to position themselves for teaming arrangements and for complementarity and also for possible M&A. So when you take that ability to create a casual or say an easy way to do networking, it means that things are going to get a little more stovepiped, and not just between among companies who are not necessarily talking to each other, but also between the government and industry at large, because the government knows that they want to do certain things in certain ways, and sometimes they don't do a very good job of external communications, their public outreach. And so, you know, we're not going to be able to have that degree of communication, and things are going to be, say, more, not just more difficult to do business, but also to do business successfully, because if you don't know what the government wants, then you can't deliver.
Okay.
And fewer government events and fewer government attendance at events exacerbates an already challenging problem of having open communication between government and industry. It is certainly clear that the better government understands the capabilities of industry and the better industry understands the needs of government, the better all of us will do in this collective community. And one of the greatest challenges facing government contractors is their ability to have these communications with government. And events where government came out and spoke about programs was one of the major forums for that intellectual interchange. And we really hate to see it ebbing away here, particularly at a critical time when industry really needs to understand government direction.
Right, and we've seen events that have a history of more than 20, 25 years, ELC, MOC. One was ELC was canceled this past year.
Mm, yes.
Largely because of weather, but I'm under the distinct impression, having heard secondhand some registration numbers, that it probably would have been anyhow.
I didn't know the numbers, but GSA has historically been a great supporter of the Executive Leadership Conference and participated significantly in it, with the ill wind blowing across GSA with respect to conference attendance and events. You would expect that attendance would be way down.
Yeah, one of the comments I saw in a group on LinkedIn, I posted Senator Coburn's request for all agencies to stop spending and send their money back to the Treasury. He asked this 10 days before end of FY. I thought it was the stand-up routine, but one of the comments was, you know, agencies are going to be buying, you know, tanks and Tahoes and doing more travel and attending events. And I'm going, in what universe?
Right. Yes. And unfortunately, and not to pick on Congress, you know, they don't quite understand the possible disruptions that they are creating in this marketplace, which is not healthy for the economy, certainly not healthy for the regional economy, not disastrous, but it's not healthy either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a one-year budget for something like this has never made sense, less so now, probably than ever. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guests today are Bob Lofeld, Lofeld Consulting, and Ray Bjorklund of Birch Grove Consulting. Gentlemen, we have literally a perfect storm here at end of FY, and all of this stuff is coming down on the contractors. We have LPTA, we have fraud, waste, abuse, which is not going to go away either. We have sequestration. We'll have best case scenario a CR, even a short term CR, which, you know, it's 6 weeks is ridiculous. but all of these things mount up to what the heck does a contractor do? Somebody start.
Somebody start. this is probably an unappealing observation that I've been making about this environment contractors are in. And that is that contractors do not naturally plan for negative growth. When you consider that so many contractors in this marketplace are very dependent on government spending, mm-hmm. and government contract spending has been going down. It's not just a matter of sequestration, and it's not a matter of what congressional appropriations have been. You know, the administration has been cutting government spending overall and contract spending in very specific ways. And you just look back what Secretary Hagel was saying most recently about, gee, maybe at OSD we ought to take another 20% cut of contractor support, well, overall spending, but a lot of it comes out of contractors. So, you know, the contractors really need to recognize that we're in this world of negative growth. The way that you're going to have positive growth is by stealing business away from your compatriots and, you know, grabbing market share from somebody else, or unless you have something very, very unique, very specialized, very attractive to the government, and, you know, then you can have pretty solid growth in that area. So you've got, less spend, same number of contractors means more competition. And you have government that is anxious to control spending, and consequently they're looking for contract vehicles like fixed price vehicles and LPTA to some degree, looking for those kinds of tools to try and keep the prices down. You keep the prices down in a more competitive environment, you have less margin, less profit, and now you become less attractive within the marketplace to capital investments. It's an interesting, you know, chain reaction of activity.
When we advise companies going forward, looking at 2013, 14, and 15, we tell them that they should plan for the worst and hope for the best. And I think companies intuitively want to do it the other way around. They're optimists about the future. They plan for the best and then get clobbered when it doesn't play out. So the direction we give is plan for the worst and hope for the best. And planning for the worst comes in sort of three levels. First, continuing resolution with its inability to start new programs. Second wave of the worst is sequestration, and that will drop budgets even more than the continuing resolution. So look at that and look at what that does to your customers and your programs. And then the third level is maybe rational deliberation will occur around budget issues.
But rational deliberation?
But that's a long shot.
So
the reality is it's going to be CR, and it's likely to be sequestration. So build your going forward proposition on that basis. And when you take that as the state of nature that we're going to see, some things become immediately apparent, that there's going to be fewer procurements that you'll compete on, and those procurements will slip to the right. So your pipeline begins to thin out. And when that happens, the companies are still out there competing. You can expect more competition on every deal. You can expect stiffer competition. So as we go into this fiscal headwind, it will be a battle of different proportions than we have seen in earlier years. The game just got tougher. Winning just got harder.
Okay. Now, does that type of attitude, the positive attitude, inflict itself on more public companies than private companies, or does that not discriminate?
I think it doesn't discriminate, but the public companies are more attuned to the argument. It's much better to tell your shareholders you've had an upside surprise than a downside disappointment. And the stock prices for publicly traded companies soar on the upside surprise and precipitously decline on a disappointment. So they're more attuned to planning for the worst and hoping for the best.
Yeah, it's part of that marketing message to their constituencies, which include the capital markets.
Right. This would be a good time to explain a little bit about where you guys fit in the market. Ray, you recently left Deltek after a number of years being the tea leaf reader at Federal Sources. Tell people a little bit about what you do.
All right. The position I'm in now is to help companies really understand what's happening in the market and the market dynamics, and to the point where really stress quantification of those changes and those trends and those directions. So companies can take the kind of analysis that Birch Grove can do and can actually make strategic decisions with hard data. And engineers normally love it, but even the marketing types love it too.
Well, it helps to be able to read the tea leaves. Throw out your URL, please, your web address.
Birch Grove, one word, -consulting.com.
Okay. Robert?
Mark, we've been in business now coming up on 10 years, and our business is helping government contractors win in a competitive environment. The more difficult the market gets, the better we do. And the services that we provide are capture strategy for pursuit of particular government procurements, and then proposal development, proposal writing services. We also teach proposal writing and capture management, and we help companies build out their business acquisition infrastructure. So all of that is serviced by a group of 135 of us in the firm. And we support over 200 government contractors now.
135.
Yeah, we're growing, and
but
135 over 10 years. Yeah. The challenge has been to find the best and brightest practitioners in the government competitive market and get them enrolled with us. So that's our business, and we're still growing and going. So,
URL.
LohfeldConsulting.com, and it's LOHFELD consulting, all one word, .com, LohfeldConsulting.com.
And we're hoping that people can spell consulting. That would be a good thing.
That's a prerequisite to be a client.
There you go. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guests today are Bob Lohfeld, Lohfeld Consulting, and Ray Bjorklund of Birch Grove Consulting. And if you've been listening for 7 years, you'll remember that Ray was the first guest I had on my show here at Federal News Radio. So welcome back yet again.
Oh, thank you.
And I keep coming
back, right?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, works for me. So we have a whole plethora of things coming down the pike here, but there's two trends that I'm hearing, and I'd like to know if you're hearing or seeing the same things. The first is primes using fewer subs. Is that real?
Unclear from the data we see to know definitively whether or not that's the case. But we know that the goals for subcontracting keep inching upward.
Right.
So the primes are told to subcontract more, But on the other hand, the oversight is not particularly good by government agencies. So whether they adhere to goal achievement or whether the agencies even know is an open issue. We know that from the contractor side, there's a disincentive often to subcontracting, and it's that the prime contractor can make more money if they don't subcontract. So you have these competing objectives going on. How it plays out is a complex issue for sure.
Well, those task orders that they're doing totally internally now are those nice little perks they get to tell their investors.
One of the new dimensions in this is that with the reduction in revenue coming into companies, they have excess labor that they need to place somewhere, and that labor is looking for a home, and I believe often displaces some of the labor that would have been subcontracted out to small business.
Yeah, I don't have any really clear data on that as well, but I certainly agree with Bob's points. And what I'd add to that, though, is that even though the government has done a very poor job of managing their prime contractors' subcontracting goal achievement, there are agencies like VA who have insisted that if you're going to do any business with VA, you practically have to have a front company. So small businesses who then are, as prime contractors, supposed to be doing 51% of the work are getting some reasonable business. So I think I agree with Bob that, you know, companies are very reluctant to subcontract out, but there are some incentives out there to do so.
Okay. Well, the other side of this coin comes into play in areas that are near and dear to both of you. And that is, I hear that the major primes, which is the top 20 or so, are all cutting back on various internal resources, among those the research bid and proposal teams. A lot of those shops that used to be particularly robust are looking bare bones right now. So the first part of this question would be, is that an accurate statement? And I don't want names of particular companies, but we're talking in broader terms here. The second part of that would be, where do you go if you are that company to fill that void?
Mark, your assessment is absolutely correct. And you could say the top 20 companies in our market, almost every one of them, has gone through significant reductions of internal operating costs, and that includes people that are on the front end of the business life cycle. It's the business developers, the capture managers, the proposal managers, the market researchers. All of them have been downsized within these companies. And we have for a long time been advising companies that they should use a 70-30 strategy. Plan to perform 70% of that work internally, and then go outside the company to firms like ours and others for that additional 30%. And the reason that that's effective for firms is that the deal flow is not uniform. You have peaks and valleys. There's cycles in the business, and if you can have surge support or specialized support to match the workload when things peak, you're more cost effective. And overall, more effective in your win probability for competing in the market.
Yeah, among this top 20, I was talking to one executive a few weeks ago, who was starting to get a little frustrated, recognizing that they had in fact cut a lot of their infrastructure at the corporate level for providing support to BNP and to capture, and just to market research in general. And concerned that maybe they're missing something now. And so, you know, Bob's point about you have to make some sort of investment in that, in your own companies, those kinds of people. But because we are in a series of ups and downs in terms of contract activity, contract spending, available budget, you know, it is important to be able to find some resources out there like a Lowfeld Consulting or Birch Grove Consulting to help you flesh out your organization. And not to necessarily augment the organization, but to give you very precise help in whether it's intelligence, whether it is a particular skill, to give you that very precise help to make you more effective as a large company in your B&P and your capture operations.
Okay. Robert, anything on that?
No, I think Ray is right. It's on one hand, the reduction of staff is good for us as a business because it brings more clients to us. On the other hand, it's a difficult market for all of us because deal flow is not as predictable as we'd like to see it, and there's fewer deals in the market. So we're all in it together, all of us trying to optimize that response dynamic.
Okay, let's go back for a minute to that study from Market Connections and Bosco Bell. And we all know this is a relationship-driven market. And my friend Bob Davis, we cut some CDs a while back on the basics of business development. And one of the stories he tells in there is particularly telling. He goes, it's a true story. He goes to an executive briefing. He tells his execs exactly where they are in the B&B process and how technically they are, you know, like a 98% fit for this particular contract. And he's getting ready to leave. And the CEO says, are we going to win? Bob turns around and looks at him matter-of-factly and says, no. And the guy says, why? He says, well, the agency doesn't know us. Boom. How much impact does that have today on these outcomes? And if you're reducing your staffs and you're getting reports, all of the intel in the world saying you're a perfect fit for this, you're a perfect fit for this, and you even hire somebody to write a proposal for you, what role does that relationship ultimately play?
It's really important, Mark. When we look at the ability of companies to win, we look at 10 factors. And the number one factor is how well they understand the customer and how well the customer knows them. And when we do a correlation analysis, looking at how well a company executes these 10 factors and whether or not they win, that customer knowledge, customer insight is the number one predictor of success. So in your analogy, here's a company just perfectly right for a deal, and yet they're not going to win, and they should know that they're not going to win, or at least the probability of winning is fairly low based on their relationship with the client. Government buys from people they know, from companies they know.
And they like that track record.
Yeah, they like that track record. Government also has under the FAR a responsibility for doing market research, but that is FAR Part 10 market research, a little different than what we use in industry. But that market research is a responsibility where they are supposed to get out and understand what can industry do and what are the market dynamics of those companies that are capable of doing X, Y, or Z. So the government also has a responsibility for getting out knowing. To get back to your point, Mark, about this recent study by Market Connections and Bosco Bell, it illustrates that that kind of communication, that kind of exposure is possibly going to affect the ability for new companies or companies that have never done work with a particular agency to enter into a market area.
Okay. Robert?
I was thinking about things that companies need to do going forward. We just did a survey on our business winning webinar. We surveyed about 300 companies and asked them where they were going to put their emphasis going forward in 2014. And it was, I thought the results were interesting, that half the companies said with fewer resources, they were going to work on their capture and proposal processes to make them better. So instead of working harder, you have to work smarter. And they all appreciated how important capture was to winning business and getting the proposals done well was important.
They leave an apple on your desk after they gave that answer.
Well, I don't know, but it was a good answer from our point of view. The rest of the companies, the other half said they were going to work on their pricing capability. That was about half the firms, and the other half of that, so it's 25%, and all said they were going to work on the quality of their proposals. And
one would hope they'd take all three of those.
And I think that's the right message. Yeah. You know, be cost conscious, run a good process, and write really good proposals. That's what you have to do to up your win.
Cool. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. After this break, we are going to pick the brains of Bob and Ray and see what contractors need to do going into 2014. Back after these. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. You can find us at federalnewsradio.com, too. That's where most people listen to me anyway. It's Monday. It's noon. Let's go out and eat lunch and listen to Mark on our transistor radio. I think that happens in D.C., doesn't it?
Probably car radio.
Yeah, well, there you go. No transistors anymore? I hate when that happens. There's new technology.
Yeah.
top things contractors need to do. Ray, start us off.
This kind of goes back to what I said in an earlier segment. I think that contractors need to establish, and I'm italicizing this, realistic goals for 2014. Recognizing that this is still a continuing down market, I believe that they need to establish these realistic goals. And that can be modest growth, which modest growth might be 1% versus some expectation of 8%, because that's what they're going to be measuring themselves against. And there's no need to self-flagellate just because they can't meet a 15% kind of goal.
Okay. Bob, any thoughts on that one?
I agree. We often hear contractors say the new normal is just to stay level in the market. And when we look at statistics, that's probably not a bad goal.
What Wall Street wants to hear.
Yeah, it's not. But then you have to break it down a little more. It depends on the market you're in. And if you happen to be building, you know, healthcare exchanges, then the market is pretty good for you. And if you were selling implements into the military that we're using in the Middle East, it's probably a downer. So you have to go the next step and look at the granularity of where you are in the market and set expectations.
Okay.
But be reasonable, because there's a downdraft across all that's going on. Not just the dollar, fewer dollars, but it's the skittishness in the market, that things get delayed without warning. And that's what hurts us most, is that the pipeline kind of becomes more of a pipe dream than a pipeline. So that's the hardest piece, the predictability of the deal flow.
Okay, then what's your number one issue here?
For me, we would tell companies, bring your leadership team together and tell them it's time for tactical planning. Let's set aside strategic planning for the moment and deal with the very short-term situation. And as a business, let's look at where you are in the market, where your contracts are, and how can you grow out from those footholds, toeholds that you have in the marketplace. It's a very tactical time as we deal with these short-term interruptions in the budget. And the loftier strategy is about, should we open up an office in Europe? That's a different kind of conversation. Or should we go into state and local, or should we branch out into commercial? Those are more strategic issues. I think it's time for tactical action. And with that, you focus and you build off your strength, and you try to expand your business based on that. So that's the direction that we're talking about near term.
I think that plays to you, doesn't it, Ray?
Well, it does, yes, except that I don't fully agree with Bob on this point. I don't think you should totally trash strategic planning. I think that's really still very important, because, you know, this downturn that we're experiencing in the market has been going on for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
It will go on for several more years. You know, how are you going to be positioned, you know, several years in the future, you know, to be able to accommodate what this market might give you as a company. So I agree that there's a lot to be dealt with the tactics right now, and I that's why I agree in part with Bob on this. But I say don't trash this, the strategic planning. That's very, very important to know what the next step is after you finish the tactics.
Yeah, since Ray disagreed with me, I'll disagree with him a little bit too. It was when we look at tactical planning and strategic planning. Most government contractors do a strategic plan, and six months later, they don't remember where they put it, and they're not following it anyway. So while it's a neat exercise to contemplate a longer-term horizon, most companies in the government market are very tactical, very short-term, and one contract win changes the complexion and direction of a company.
I agree with that point too. That they are very tactically oriented, but the kind of strategy I'm talking about is not just the annual exercise. It's really making a careful self-assessment of what you are capable of doing today, and what you think you might want to do in the future. Not just we're going to do more of the same, but let's take cyber for instance. I mean, cyber is a continually growing market. Building tactical vehicles for combat is not. And if you're in building tactical vehicles for combat as a market, you need to figure out how to migrate out of that, not to dump it, but to get out of it a little bit and get into something that is really going to be better for you in the future, in the longer run. And that's real strategic planning.
And that's right, the way Ray describes it. The shortcoming that we see in strategic planning is that companies will plan, they have the vision, but then they don't fund the execution of the plan. So you can't wish yourself into cybersecurity. You have to do something to get there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's where they break down.
Okay, who has the next point?
I guess it's my turn.
Okay. There you go.
I think that companies going forward in 2014 need to figure out how to not carry a big bench. And to that extent, is learn how to use resource pools a little bit better. And this gets into some of the financial analysis in the company, getting positioned so that you can be competitive in pricing, and learning that maybe you shouldn't have five business units. Maybe you should only have three with some resources pooled among that. That will give you the flexibility, as Bob has been suggesting, to keep up with the tempo of the market. And tempo isn't just acceleration, it's also deceleration. Mm-hmm. And it's constant changes in acceleration. So being able to have that flexibility in your organization, be able to take an engineer that you would otherwise have to put on the bench because that engineer happens to be stovepiped in one business unit, and be able to repurpose that engineer in a different part of your business. So it's really having that degree of flexibility.
Okay, so you really have to understand who your team players are and the potential multifacetedness of their capability.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, that's been great for us in our business because we are often viewed as staff augmentation to government contractors.
Right.
And it's augmentation and capture management and proposal support. So we fully embrace that strategy, endorse it, and recommend.
One thing that brings to mind for me, I've done some consulting in this area, and I know there's a number of companies out there, Boss, Aquant, and others, that provide that temporary staffing on a regular basis, and their business fluctuates according to market whims. So, but what's your next point?
When we look at the market, there's basically four ways that government contractors get business. And those four are off of GSA schedules, through set-aside programs, through contract vehicles that are awarded these IDIQ, GWAC kinds of vehicles, and through full and open competition. And we like to see government contractors with a balanced footprint so that they can go after deals in the government market using any of those four approaches. So with schedules, GSA Schedule 70 or MOBIS schedule is really a foundational tool for most government contractors. B, being able to play in the set-aside market, if it's a small business set-aside or 8A set-aside or other...
For a lot of your clients,
service-disabled, veteran-owned. Yes, it means having good relationships with companies that can carry you through in those when the deals come out as a set-asides. Having vehicles is really essential. And when we looked at the year-end activity for companies, those that had good vehicles were writing lots of proposals. And those that didn't have an abundance of vehicles had idle time. Mm-hmm. So this year-end rush came largely through multiple award contract vehicles. And then the traditional full and open competition is out there. And you have to be able to play in all four avenues to have a good portfolio.
Ray, you're going to get a comment on this, and then we're going to begin our wrap.
Yep. Well, at this point, I do agree with Bob that you have to have the variety of vehicles. And this kind of goes back to the point I was making earlier about the government not doing sufficient level of market research. And what that leads them to do often is take the path of least resistance, what they did last week or 2 months ago, and choose the same kind of contract platform, same kind of contract vehicle. And if you're not aligned with that as a company, then you're not going to be in a position to receive the contract. I had a client that lost a contract because they had not quite got their GSA schedule, and the government said, that's the way we want to do it. And so they lost the contract and the follow-on.
So one of the terms in the RFP was you got to have GSA?
That's because that was the acquisition strategy of the government.
Okay. Well, it makes sense. I mean, you know, that goes to that past performance issue. And it's but, you know, if you look at Schedule 70, and this is still true, there's still over 5,500, 6,000 or so vendors on 70. And the bottom third make next to nothing. And when I say next to nothing, I mean a couple hundred or more making $0 on an annual basis.
Yes.
And that bottom third not making that $25,000 cut.
Yep. Yeah. Contract vehicles are wonderful, but they're just a license to hunt.
Right.
Yeah, and you got to do your homework.
Yep. Yeah. Getting the contract vehicle, that's the beginning of the game, not the end of the game. The market doesn't come to you. You
so
have to go
true.
Get it.
So true. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me today. This is not my day job. If your company needs to maximize the power that LinkedIn brings to the table now that events seem to be dissipating, talk to me. You can find me at federaldirect.net. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.